welcome to a new episode of the Monday Mile podcast. This week is all about the heart. It's the epicenter of who we are. And today's guests, yes, guests, today we are joined by two inspirational individuals, both with completely different stories that today are going to inspire your Monday. First up, known best for his time on Made in Chelsea, he's an entrepreneur, fashion designer, brand owner, and dad. It's Oliver Proudlock. Next up, a true gentleman, a man known best for his epic solo mission rowing the Atlantic, a former rugby player and co-owner alongside Proudlock of QV, and a man defying all odds whilst living with heart arrhythmia. It's Elliot Awin. Hello, gents.
Hello.
How are we?
Very good, thanks.
Lovely intros.
Yeah, you're happy with that. So I was concerned you wouldn't be happy about the Made in Chelsea.
Do you know what? I don't mind. Like, at the end of the day, that is how people know me. So it would be weird and not to mention it. So yeah, it doesn't bother me.
That would be like introducing me not
best known for his paddle skills.
Yeah.
Best known for his surfing skills. Yeah.
Somewhat known for his obsession with Kelly Slater.
You may have seen him with Kelly on some sick weights.
Or you may not have.
But you probably wouldn't have.
Right, gents. There's clearly some chemistry here. First of all, how did you both meet?
How did I meet Elliot? So I'm trying to think where we actually...
Converse event.
Was it? Okay. So it was at a Converse event. Very niche.
Who's the Converse fan? Because I love Converse.
I was working with Converse and Elliot was just sort of, you know, he was there. Converse fan.
Yeah, friend organising the party and I was there and Proudlock was there. And like, yeah. I think we kind of met on the dance floor. It was, you know, as Converse, it's quite a cool thing. I think we just both dressed quite nichely.
I was like,
so are you just implying that you're both kind of cool guys?
Yeah? I think more niche.
I think niche is our common ground. Cool is a matter of perspective.
Okay.
And I would definitely not classify myself as cool, but I kind of like to think I fit in a niche somewhere.
100%.
And how did this bond, this friendship, formulate from a Converse event to what looks like is going to be your first ever marathon together?
I know.
That's quite the commitment when it comes to friendship.
I guess actually we probably really bonded over lockdown, drinking remotely together.
So, we bonded over a lot of wine.
So we drank a lot of wine together over lockdown, virtually on Zoom, on Instagram. Come the end of lockdown, we decided we like wine and eating and drinking so much, we should probably start a wine brand.
That's wild. Amen.
So yeah, we started with booze and now we're moving into a bit more of a healthy. You know, we were like, it's all about balance. Life's about balance.
Absolutely.
Elliot loves a challenge, as we all know. And Elliot actually called me and he was like, dude, what do you think about doing the marathon next year? It'll be 10 years since I last did one. I was a little unsure at the start, I remember, because I was like, when I did the marathon, I loved it. I thought it was an incredible experience, but I thought I was just going to do one and done. That was sort of the vibe.
And how many have you done?
Just one. I've only done one. Okay, so I did the London Marathon
but
10 years ago.
I knew the sort of person that Ollie is, and he didn't quite manage to hit the target at the time.
This is perfect for you then.
It is. It is for, well, for me. I mean, I am certainly not going to be hitting the same sort of target that Ol's looking to achieve. I think...
So you're not running together. Are you going to start together?
We'll start together.
Start together. Okay. We certainly won't finish together.
Well, I mean, you never know. I mean, I know how competitive Elliot is. And, you know, as you know, you've done a marathon. You know what it's like on the day. The energy, the vibe. You just get this extra sprint.
Anything can happen.
So actually,
I tell you what can't happen is me running 4 minute kilometers for 3 hours. There's a lot of body to be carrying around that 26
you are
point something
quite,
miles.
Quite the rig. Your body type is
very different.
Oh, very, very different.
I think I've probably got nearly 30 kilos on Ollie.
How dare you? I'm not sure about that, my friend.
It's a bad thing. When it comes to running, it's not a good thing, right?
Are you 120 kilos?
No, you're not.
I'm coming in at a strong 90 at the moment.
What, carrying the shopping circuit wet?
Dude, I'm pure muscle right now. 90 kg.
Yeah. So you're 70 kilos.
You're 120?
I'm 105, yeah.
Okay. So yeah, obviously our body types are very different.
Now we've got the weight sorted out. You're definitely... confirmed at a disadvantage. However, when it comes to dealing with operating in a mental capacity over a long period of time. Elliot, you definitely do have experience in that space. Talk to me about the reason why you are running for the British Heart Foundation.
Well, so I had a pacemaker fitted in February 2020 after 6 years of being in and out of hospital, trying to get a heart arrhythmia under control, and then decided that I would row the Atlantic solo to both raise funds for the British Heart Foundation and to raise awareness that having a heart arrhythmia diagnosis doesn't mean it's the end of your life. Right? I mean, you don't have to sit at home on the sofa dwelling about a poor or ill heart health. You can get up and do some pretty cool stuff and certainly live a normal life. Rode the Atlantic solo, and then speaking to the British Heart Foundation, realized that perhaps the Atlantic is a little bit out of reach of other people who might have a heart arrhythmia, but the London Marathon or even just running is actually very accessible. And so spoke to them and said, I'd love to run the London Marathon to bring you a little bit closer to home, the idea of sort of getting up off the sofa and doing some activity. And then obviously I knew with Ollie and I being so close, when he ran it 10 years ago, he had also run it for the British Heart Foundation because of sort of his connection with heart health as well. And I thought, what better way for me to push myself to run it with someone? I don't like running because you normally have to run on your own. So I had to have a bit of...
However, you've rode the Atlantic on your own.
I know.
I mean, it doesn't make sense, does it?
So I said to Elliot, obviously once he'd done that, I was like, if you had the opportunity to do that again, would you do it by yourself? And what was your answer?
No, I'd definitely do it with someone and share that experience.
Yeah, because that's always what I thought. Like, obviously, it's an incredible thing to do it by yourself. I mean, huge respect. But all those things and emotions and everything that Elliot went through over that row, when he comes back here, he had those experiences and he can tell other people. Yeah. But, you know, imagine if you and I did it together.
Then we'd
meet for a little beer of some sort and we just reminisce.
Stop making me annoyed that I didn't do it with someone. But this is why we're doing the marathon together, bro.
Exactly.
And so in 10 years' time, another 10 years' time, we'll be sitting around having a beer, being like, do you remember that time that Ollie, you beat me in the marathon by an hour and a half?
No, it could be the other way. I'd be like, Elliot, do you remember when you just pulled it out of the bag and did a sub 3 hour marathon?
Through this conversation, I think what we've discovered already is that you should actually run together. So Elliot, this is your opportunity to push yourself to Pratt level in the running space.
I agree.
You can try.
You've heard it right here. Here's the commitment. I'm doing it for you.
It's a mental game.
I guess we should have sponsorship based on how quickly or how far behind I come behind you.
And Pratt, look, your story with the British Heart Foundation is quite different to Elliot's. You've suffered bereavement.
Yeah.
And you are running to raise awareness.
Absolutely. I've been an ambassador for the BHF now for 10 years, just over actually. And a lot of the important male figures in my life I've lost to heart conditions. So my granddad had a heart attack, my uncle, and then sadly my dad who passed 6 years ago. For me to just, you know, raise as much awareness as possible. Obviously with this one, it's going to be a little bit emotional because the last time I ran it, my dad was alive. So with this one, I'm going to be thinking about him a lot, thinking about all those other people around the world who've lost loved ones to heart conditions. Hopefully we raise as much awareness and as much money as possible.
Absolutely. I think now being involved with the British Heart Foundation this year, it's amazing how much research they fund and how preventable heart conditions are and how improving wellness as well as extending longevity with a bit of research, it has the biggest impact on life expectancy in the UK, the research that the BHF have been funding.
Exactly that.
And Pratt, look, just channeling your energy into the work you've done with the British Heart Foundation help with that bereavement process? Because there is an element of giving back for 100%. A greater purpose.
100%. I think when you've gone through something like that, and although it's been many, many years, it still feels very fresh. So, you know, I think about my dad all the time. So often I come and run along here. And, you know, every time I'm coming on a run and I come along here, I just think about him. And I, you know, I think how great it would be if he was still here. You know, sadly, he's not. But there are so many other people right now who, if we raise as much money as we can, you know, so many lives can be saved. And that's the important thing, you know.
It really, really can make a difference. And I think that's what was so inspirational about being at the British Heart Foundation Awards a couple of weeks ago.
Isn't it incredible? That's so emotional, that event.
So touching.
I think what's crazy is we see so many charities out there doing incredible things, but the research that is being done and the changes that are being made are quite literally life-changing. Yeah. Like, it touches you. Like, right now, sure. I have goosebumps thinking about the developments we're seeing. It's insane.
I think as well, like, when you think back to that event, my dad passed when he was, you know, he was 70. And I think often with heart conditions, people always think of people who are slightly older. But having been at those events, you see so many young people who've lost their lives. And to see some of the parents there that night and how strong they've been and all the stuff they want to give back. I mean, that for me is just the most incredible thing.
And bereavement does come in different forms. And you, you both have your own story with that. Elliot, for you, being diagnosed with heart arrhythmia in 2014, essentially, you had to reframe your lifestyle and adapt to a new way of living.
Absolutely. Most frustratingly at the time, it ended up being quite short-lived, thankfully, is I had to give up rugby. Having played for the same rugby club for over 25 years, seeing 60 of my best mates every Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, I could no longer play contact sport. And somehow I just sort of fell into the world of CrossFit, competitive exercising, adult PE.
Hence the henchness. Right?
Yeah, and hence you're so hench.
Hence the hench. No, that was kind of intuitive. But I think if we take away the values that I appreciate of being a rugby player, that like competitive nature, the community spirit, perhaps being a role model to the younger guys coming through, had I taken a step back and analysed those values and then worked out what could replace them in my life, I probably would have done a bit more work and ended up doing CrossFit anyway. Like, it's got a great community, etc. So my biggest lesson and takeaway and being able to share my story is when that sort of noun of identity, i.e. rugby player, got taken away from me, is be a little bit mindful as to what values it served, that sort of that label served, and then look elsewhere for
where you can find similar values, right?
Where we can find similar values. Exactly.
So what would you say to someone, because you've lived this experience, you've been living with your pacemaker now for how long?
Just 4 years now.
Four years. What would you say to someone who has recently been diagnosed with heart arrhythmia and had those elements of their life stripped back?
The first thing, actually, when you get a heart arrhythmia diagnosis or you've been treated for a heart condition or a heart operation, there's a huge propensity to fall into some level of depression, because a lot of autonomy is taken away. And autonomy is one of the key elements of motivation. And when you're told you can't do something and you're restricted, you lose motivation. When I had my pacemaker for 4 weeks, I was told to stay at home, do nothing. And I found myself not even getting motivated to go to the post office to pick up a parcel that I had missed off the front door because I didn't get up off the sofa to go and collect it.
Did you have in that time, a lot of internal thinking? And
I was watching daytime TV, just
love
dwelling in my...
TV. Yeah. I'd be in my element.
What was going through your mind then?
But 4 weeks of daytime TV is death.
What was going through your mind then?
Nothing is the problem. Nothing is going through my mind. And actually, you remove mindfulness and all you do is dwell on the past and anxious about the future.
Yeah.
And so you're not actually living. So going back to having lived that experience, and if I was telling myself 4 years ago when I was getting my pacemaker fitted, is those 4 weeks of loss of autonomy will pass. You will be able to get back to some sort of training, and you just have to push yourself out of that rut for a little bit. That is the bit of the struggle. Somehow I then found myself thriving even more because I kind of realized the brevity of life. And then you're like, well, actually, I could row the Atlantic.
Yeah.
And then stop thinking about doing it and just go and do it.
But the fact that you're doing these things, bro, like for anyone now who's maybe going through that, I would literally just look at you and be like, oh my gosh, like, look at what this guy's doing. I mean, this is unbelievable.
Isn't it amazing?
Do you know what I mean?
I don't know
anyone else in my circle who could do what this guy does.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact that he's doing it with a pacemaker is not only unbelievable, but it's so inspiring to so many people who are maybe going through what you went through.
And what is so incredible is that it was recognised. Proudlot presented you.
Yes.
Last week.
How emotional was that?
Oh, wow.
And I've
Take
known.
Me to that moment, because you knew.
So I've known that Elliot was going to be the hero of the year. And I've known for quite a few months. You know, we obviously wanted to keep it a surprise.
It was quite hard to keep a surprise.
I actually don't know how you get a surprise for five months.
It's been, and I know like how much it meant to him, and I really wanted to share, you know, to tell him, but obviously we held off, and it was so worth it, because on the night, you know, you got really emotional.
I did, yeah, I cried.
I had Elliot's girlfriend, shout out to Lucy, messaging me while she's in India going, surely you know. And I was like, mate, it's not looking good. I had to totally put her off the scent to, you know, because you don't want to ruin that moment.
No.
I mean, it was, I'll just take the exact moment when you're saying, and this is Heart Hero, is someone who's gone above and beyond for the British Heart Foundation, raised tens of thousands of pounds. At this point, it could still
be anyone.
Be anyone. It should be anyone. Anyone who's done that. And so the first moment is when my face finishing on the Atlantic comes up on the big screen. I'm like, burst into tears.
Oh. Yeah.
So just going back to the moment being recognised as Heart Hero of the Year, it's quite a...
I'm getting done on the hill here. See you later, guys. A midget over here. Do you want to swap, mate?
Yeah,
what's happening here?
I don't know. I'm even wearing barefoot shoes, bro.
This is not ideal.
It's fine. I'm here to make
hey,
you.
Hey, guys, look. Just check. Look at the slope, everyone. You see the slope? Yeah. Big slope. Big, big slope.
So this is just further proof that I weigh 30 kilos more.
Dude, I'm a strong 90 at the moment, all right? Don't worry about it.
This is why, Paddock, you say, out and back running, if you go out, your level, and then you need to come back because otherwise
you get
your
hips
wouldn't be aligned.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So normally I go
all the way around.
Yeah, Elliot, back to your moment.
No, a lot of people say, oh, what does it mean to win an award? And I don't like the idea of it being an award. I don't like the idea of me winning. But what I do really admire is the fact that the story of being able to do something despite having that heart rhythm diagnosis, that story is then elevated, pushed out, got a new platform to be amplified so that more people will hear the story. I think that's really, I'm super competitive, and like my original goal was to win the solo race across the Atlantic. I trained so hard. I trained probably the hardest, I think, out of everyone in the race, but then I overestimated how much of a physical impact I could have on the race and therefore ended up coming second because of the route and potentially for a number of reasons.
Still but, podium shot though.
In part, but what really kept me going and my sort of metric of success of the row was hearing stories that other people had done stuff because they had seen my story. Like a lady who had a five-year-old son who was diagnosed with exactly the same heart arrhythmia that I was diagnosed with, Wolf Parkinson White. He was scared to go to school and play football with his mates and do physical activity because he had, in inverted commas, a heart problem. Mm. But then she started showing him my story of rowing across the Atlantic, and now he thinks he's going to row across the Atlantic. Amazing, and that is so special. That's so like,
and that's
literally heartwarming. Gives me
it's
goosebumps.
Not about the position you come, whether it's first or second. It's not about the time you do in the marathon. It's about the lives that change.
Exactly. It does sound like a bit of a cop-out from not coming first, but at the same time, that is really feels so valuable.
100%.
It just doesn't matter. That's irrelevant. And I think that's what's so special about your friendship also in the coming together when it comes to the marathon. You've both got completely different stories and journeys,
sure,
but they sync up so well. Your passion for food, wine, movement,
exercise.
Proud lot. When it comes to your journey with the British Heart Foundation, you've obviously been an ambassador for years.
Yeah.
Is there an element of fear when it comes to your own personal journey, knowing your family history?
It's funny, so all my dad, uncle, grandfather, they all had irregular heartbeats as well, which is quite a common thing. But I remember, you know, especially when I was younger, I was very aware of the fact that the male figures on my dad's side didn't have potentially very strong hearts. Their journey was quite lifestyle driven.
Yeah.
They weren't the healthiest guys. So, you know, for me, it's important that I look after myself. Obviously, a bit of balance. Like, we like to have a little bit of wine in there. But, you know, health as well. So I like to really look after myself and love my dad to bits. You know, his nickname was Penguin. He was, you know, he was a slightly big guy. He lived life at the fullest.
I love that.
You know, and he had an amazing life, but who knows, maybe had he looked after himself a little bit more, maybe he could have had a few more years.
So does that in turn inspire you on the days where you wake up and it's like this?
Yeah.
It's a Monday, it's wet, it's cold, and most people just want to hibernate.
For sure.
Does it push you to create that balance?
100%. And I think since becoming a dad, when I'm older as well, my daughter's, you know, in her teenage years, I want to be able to be very active, you know, and I want to like make sure that I'm the healthiest I can be. So 100%, it motivates me.
Let's tap into routines.
Yes.
Cool.
Elliot.
Who's got the most savage routine? Elliot. He's an absolute beast.
He's an animal.
He is an animal.
The fact that he hasn't worked out this morning, I'm quite miffed by it.
But I think we're quite similar, Elliot and I, like that.
Yeah.
We're creatures of habit.
Okay.
And when we get into routines, we both like our routine and we're very good at sticking by it.
Okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, yeah. No, I sometimes fall off the wagon, though. I say fall off the wagon.
Yeah. I've worried about him a few times.
But I fall off the wagon, annoyingly, I've then realised how ridiculous that sounds, because it probably just means not getting up at 5 a.m. for 3 days in a row.
Yeah. Getting up at 6.
Yeah, getting up at 6. Specifically, as it comes to the marathon, I am struggling big time to move away from my current training regime, which I love so much, which is getting up at 5, leaving the house at 5:30, having made my like pre-workout shake.
Did you see the hop he did there?
That was so excited.
By the morning routine. I can just
That's how excited I am.
Let's go.
Oh my
and
God,
making his little
think,
pre-game
I can't think of anything worse. God,
I can't believe you just like hopped when you spoke about it. I mean, that is outrageous to you.
I get up so early
and have my creatine.
I don't want to be that guy who's like preaching about waking up at 5 o'clock. I just really like it. I go to bed at 8:39, so like, I can't
see ya.
Yeah, but balance. I will occasionally have a big night out and drink loads of wine.
Yeah.
So then I'm in the gym and training with people at 6, and there's a special kind of person. Is hopping as they're making their pre-workout shake and training at 6 a.m. And so you're all in the gym together. You like, I then probably have a flat white with them after. There's a coffee roaster next door to the gym. Yeah. So at 7:15, I'm done. I then can go to the office, get some stuff sorted.
Your session of training is done before a lot of people even wake up, right?
Because I think if you come to going back to the training for the Atlantic, I had no other time to get 2 hours on the ergon other than 6 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
Like, no one wants to get home after a hard day
and
row on a rowing machine for 2 hours.
I couldn't think of anything worse.
Yeah. But that goes to show the point there that when you're committed to something, you know how a lot of people will be like, oh, I don't have the time to do it because I've got to be at work at 8 or whatever.
That's
whereas Elliot, in his mind, is like, right, if I've got to be at work at 8, I'll work back from that. Fine, I'll get up at 5.
There
I'll
is a limit. I don't like setting my alarm with a 4 in it at the beginning.
That's like you work on breakfast TV.
Yeah.
Pradok, how about your routine? How are you
fitting in the routine, running? My routine has definitely changed a little bit since having my daughter. Previous to that, I was quite similar to Elliot. So I would sort of get up, probably not 5. I would get into the gym for 6. So I'd probably up at like 5:30. But I would love getting in when no one was there.
Yeah.
And it would set me up for the day. And again, you know, I would like the fact by the time it's 7:30, I've done my workout and I can then crack on with my day. Whereas now it kind of starts a little bit later. I've got to get my daughter ready for nursery and we have breakfast together. And I love having those mornings together.
And how are you fitting in then your movement throughout the day? Because a lot of people that will be listening to this podcast, they're looking for that source of inspiration. What's actually really unique about both of you is your routines are so different.
Yeah.
So there's something to take away here for anyone listening
for sure.
to this.
The importance for both of us, I think, is for anyone who's listening, it's like everyone has different days. Everyone has, you know, a different schedule, different work, different personal life. But if you can make time just for a little bit of movement, no matter what it is, whether it's CrossFit, whether it's running, whether it's walking, what we're doing now, the benefits that you can get from it.
I also think it's not just the physical and health benefits, it's the mental benefit.
It's that like, comes from it, 100%.
Because if we think about like big motivation theories is self-determination, which revolves around autonomy, competency, and relatedness. That sort of like control of autonomy, as in like, I can control something. Let's say you're in a job and it's quite hard. You're working like 8 to 8. You're not in control necessarily of like that stuff at work. You go to work and you have to do the stuff that you've got to do. Maybe you have some autonomy within work, but away from work, you need to like have your own space. And this is why I love the name of that gym, Third Space, because you've got work, you've got home, and then you've got third space, right?
Oh, man.
I'm going to sign up. I have no affiliation, but I just love the name.
I've never even been in one.
And this episode is sponsored by
Third Space.
Taking some control of something is so important. So whether that be your diet, fasting, malarkey, what the best bit about it, whether you're a calorie deficit or not, it's irrelevant. It's you are taking control and you feel like you're doing something and like creating a routine for something. Same with movement. And like if you just get up and do 10 press-ups in the morning,
yeah,
that is something. And you're being autonomous and you're controlling that bit of your life, that that 10 press-up, that it could take 30 seconds.
It's controlling the controllables. So especially for those that work freelance, myself, for example, it's like, what can I control within my day? Mm-hmm. When the phone, you know, rings and everything changes at the drop of the hat, I can control my commitment to myself.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Whether it's at 6 a.m., 1 p.m., it is...
it's little snakes.
It's the most beautiful way of creating self-purpose.
Thank you.
That's 100. It. And also, I hate being preachy or like coming up with the sort of cliches, but the idea of I can't find the time to do something, making time is so so important. And if even if it's just making 30 seconds to do some air squats, some press-ups, it's that nick into being able to control something. And once you start getting into that routine, you can might be able to expand that routine. And then you feel competent in the idea that you can make time to do something.
I think as well, you want it to get to a point where it's almost like brushing your teeth, right?
Yeah.
You don't think of, like, we all brush our teeth, well, I hope we do, every morning. I know Elliot sometimes does it. But like every morning, every night, you brush your teeth. Like, that's just the dumb thing. You don't think about it. So if you can get fitness to that point where it almost just becomes that thing, and no matter its capacity, how intense it might be, and like he says, making that decision and having control, you know, is, and then when you start feeling the benefits of it.
So Proud Luck, what would you say to someone that is juggling life with kids?
Yeah.
How and when do you fit it in within your schedule?
How do I personally or in general?
You personally.
Oh, so me? So obviously mornings we have together, my wife and I and Bon. And then I tend to do it after Bon's gone to nursery, or sometimes depending on the day, I might go in my lunch break or something like that. Even if it's now, especially with running, in my lunch break, just come and do a little run along here, along the river. But for me, I really try if I can to do it in the mornings. But it does just mean now that my day starts a little bit later compared to back in the day when I used to get up earlier and train super early.
I think the other advantage of doing stuff in the morning is we underestimate how taxing on our central nervous system, so a bit of our physiology that determines stress physically as opposed to mentally, how taxing it can be by the end of the day.
Yeah.
Thinking and being stressed at work can really put pressure on our bodies. And therefore, if you do your exercise in the morning, you don't ever reach that point of being overly stressed in the evening and therefore not wanting to do it. And so your best opportunity to not lose motivation and not feel like it's a chore is to do stuff in the morning.
Which is funny though, I'm with you on that. But there are a lot of people who actually prefer training at the end of the day. I find it crazy because I'm the same. At the end of the day, I feel a little bit exhausted mentally
jaded.
And physically.
Yeah.
But some people do love it.
And there's more opportunity if you do it at the end of the day to be swayed to not do it. Because in the morning, it's non-negotiable. You wake up and you go and you do it. Whereas if it's in the evening, it's like, oh, maybe I'll have a drink with my friend at lunch or evening for dinner.
But back to what you say is of some people prefer it in the evening. There's night owls, as you get. Like people who are better at 3 o'clock in the morning than they are
100%
at 7 o'clock in the morning. So
that. But I always find personally, and I'm sure it's the same with you guys, but I find when I do it in the morning, you know, you get that endorphin rush. And also for me, I like it because it's that little moment to myself at the beginning of the day that gets me set up for the day.
Yeah.
Do you know, I mean, that time, I mean, Elliot obviously trains quite a lot. CrossFit, there's a big community. I often train by myself and I like it because I can get in the zone. I can think about, right, what do I want to achieve in the day ahead? I maybe think about the day gone past and it's that hour by myself that I can really just like.
Yeah, it's me time.
Yeah, it's me time.
No, too right. I'm with you on the me time.
Yeah.
Talking of me time, if I was to give you the keys to freedom, four wheels and the ultimate Michelin fueled adventure, where would you travel to and who would you travel with? You can take three people or go solo.
Wow.
That's amazing.
That's a
but
huge
also Michelin fueled adventure. Are we talking Michelin starred eating or Michelin tires?
Tires.
It's tires.
So you can go anywhere.
I know. Yeah.
Anywhere.
I've got to go to Norway. and I want to go to the Lofoten Islands and drive all the way up to northern Norway. Hope they've got big snow tires.
Yeah, big snow tires.
I would probably go Michelin tires on my Grenadier overland, and I'd want to go on a massive adventure. I've been wanting to learn to paraglide since I got back from the Atlantic.
Wow.
And so, you know, Wade Eastwood, he's been wanting me to paraglide. I'd definitely take Wade.
Fellow guest of the podcast.
And I probably therefore have to take Sam and Lucy as well. Wait,
mate,
Sam is Wade.
This is so rude.
Do you want to learn to
paragliding is probably not on my list.
That's why. Sorry, bro.
No, it's fine, dude. But, you know, let this lady could have asked me anyway, but don't worry about it. I've always wanted to learn how to surf.
Oh, cool.
So for me, I'd probably... Me and just Kelly Slater. I think just the two of us.
Nice.
No messing around.
I just go, yo, Kelly.
Top dog.
I'd say to Kelly, I'm like, turn me into Kelly Slater Jr.
Yeah, I love it.
And we travel the world for a year.
No way, a year. You're going.
I'm out. I'm out. Sorry, Em. Sorry, Bond.
That really is free.
I'm seeing you.
Em's and Bond.
But listen.
Whoa. No, that is free.
I know. It's a lot of freedom. I'm sorry.
So there's a...
I feel like it would need a full year for me and Kelly to just get to... You know, well, one, to experience the biggest waves all around the world, but two, for me to get to a level where I can take on some of the biggest waves.
I think there's a bit of a bromance going on here. I
actually between me and Kelly.
Just think you want to spend time with Kelly.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Okay.
He is awesome. Did you see that coming or not?
No, cool. I
didn't see that coming either.
I
was thinking more like slicks and road tires and like you go like racing like Monte Carlo.
Mine's different vibes, bro.
They're both equally as cool. We are on the Monday Mile podcast, so we like to ask all of our guests what their relationship is like with Monday. Elliot, do you like a Monday?
I do like a Monday. I think it's like a perfect... I like, obviously, the notion of doing stuff all the time. But Monday is a natural new leaf in the book. And therefore, like, you can forget what happened last week and suddenly you can just be like, good again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like Mondays.
I like the good again. Is that how when you get up on a Monday, it's just, I'm going to be good again.
Yeah, I do the double. I'm like, pre-workout on a Monday.
Yeah. I can't wait to go to the gym.
How about you?
I'm with you on that. I feel for me, Monday sets the tone for the week. So I always like to... start it right. So Monday I find in the mornings is a little bit of an admin, just getting prepped and set for the week ahead.
See, I do that on a Sunday night, so maybe taints Sunday night, but then I'm excited for the Monday.
You're excited for Monday because you know what's coming. I'm all about a little Monday, just get prepped, get pumped for the week ahead. And like he says, you know, it's just like it's a new week.
I think that should be the...
Yeah, I'm going to do that every Monday.
Is there a Monday Mile jingle?
As I'm formulating my creatine pre-workout shake, I've definitely never had one of those in my life. That's probably because I normally start with hot yoga rather than shifting some serious tin. Yeah. And lastly, gents, we do like to ask all of our guests if they have a life motto or quote that they live by that you can share... with our listeners. You're in first.
All right, you ready?
I'm so ready.
So mine is don't just love it, live it.
So whatever
it is you're doing in life, you can love it, but to really like push yourself within that field, whatever it is, you got to live it. You got to really live it every day.
Magic. Elliot?
I do have one. I kind of have two, really.
I hope so.
If you think you can or think you can't, you're probably right. The idea that if you...
Interesting.
You've got me on that one. Oh,
right. So basically,
that's a bit heavy for a Monday.
Why? Why did you drop the bomb on that one?
Yeah, guys, choose which one you want this Monday.
All right. Well, basically, I'm going to say that if you have the notion that if you're thinking, oh, I don't think I can do that, then you're probably right. And you could just have this binary switch in mindset. It's like, I think I can do that. Then you could probably be able to do it.
Brilliant.
Interesting.
I'm definitely confused by that one.
Me too.
No. So, okay, I'll give you an example.
I just want to clarify. If you feel like you can't do something, flip that around. You can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that what you meant?
No, yeah, exactly.
Monday Mile listeners, it is a wrap. Elliot Proudlock, thank you so much for joining us here on the Monday Mile Walk and Talk podcast. To those of you tuning in to the audio, you know what to do. Do make sure to subscribe. And we will see you every single Monday morning from 12 a.m. for the early risers. Monday Mile listeners, it is a wrap.
Wrap, guys. On Thank three, you. Can we just do one of Elliot's on Monday? One, two, three. Woo!